Hey, Bob Saget here. That's right. You know that. You clicked. You clicked on the thing. Maybe you even called that number up there, because sometimes I'll put on, on Instagram stories or on Twitter that I'll be calling you guys. And I do. I call you guys to some of the episodes and me talking to the peeps out there. The peeps, meaning tiny little chicks or those little marshmallow things. I hated those things. Peeps. I don't know if you ate those things. Are they a sponsor? Am I in trouble? I hate peeps. I can't say that. I love peeps. That's what I meant. I do love people and I love doing this show. So this is Bob Saget here for you, and welcome. Welcome. This is, I keep saying another special episode, but it's one of my dearest friends, because I'm very fortunate, because a lot of the guests that I've been having that are not people that I call are people that I call who might be well-known, and you might be fans of theirs. And this person, definitely, I've known for such a long time in my career. We became closer after they did a Comedy Central roast of me. And he came in at the last minute to be there. And I've known him for I don't know, God. We keep aging ourselves when I have people on. And he's younger than me, which is always the case. Except for Norman Lear. He's one of the few guests older than me so far. I'm looking for older guests. But he's a very young 97. But this guy, you know him from the Goldbergs. You know him, of course, from Curb Your Enthusiasm, one of the funniest shows that will ever be made in the history of television. And here he is. We're going to go to a two-shot if you're looking at it on the YouTube. And otherwise, you'll just be trying to think of a two-shot joke. Two shots and no, never mind. Shat your pants? Nope. Here's Jeff Garland. Jeff, it's Bob, and I forgot to hit record on my big podcast thing. But we have it on Zoom. We have it on Zoom.
But we've already done 3 hours, Bob.
I know. That's the disadvantage of the audience. That's what they're going to miss out on.
Let's recreate the 3 hours that we just did.
Show me the headset you could have used. This is what you missed, everybody. We were two Jews trying to work Zoom and FaceTime audio. And Jeff is my guest and my dear friend on Bob Saget's here for you.
But the thing that I wanted to say that came up about comedians and whatever was that, and this is coming back now unnaturally, I realize, for our viewers, but we were talking about comedians and comedy and that being a comedian, as far as you're concerned, as far as I'm concerned, as far as our brothers and sisters of comedy, it's a calling. Real comedians, it's a calling. It's not a, let's see what I can do. This is a good showbiz move. Maybe I'll get into movies or whatever.
I hope I get a sitcom. I want to have a job. I just had a baby. Right.
Nope.
I want to get laid.
Because it's too hard to have it be anything else but a calling.
Well, I've been repeating this as a mantra because I read it on Instagram, because I never go on there anymore. It's all we do, right? So I'm looking through it before I go to bed. And everybody says, my wife says, tell him, my wife, Jeff knows, my wife. Jeff is at my wedding. But what happened is, she says, when you go to bed, you're not supposed to look at that light. You know, it's supposed to keep you up.
No, the blue light, that late night is bad. And I watch at the lowest light, like reading a book on my
iPad.
Whatever. Yeah. No, on my phone. The iPad's too big for bed. I have it. I watch TV shows sometimes. But that blue light keeps you up. You have at least 90 minutes to chill out after to recover from that light, if not longer.
So basically what you've just confirmed for me is that everything she says is correct.
Well, yeah. If she's your wife and you're happily married, everything that she says is correct. That's the way you have to approach it. But also, I'm going to be really blunt, and people don't always agree with me. Women are so much smarter than us. It's ridiculous. They are more skilled in everything. They are so much better than men. I'm talking about most women. Some women, but most women. Some men are enlightened. Most men fit in with the few women that are idiots. Like, as men, I always explain to anyone
Look at the world. I mean, look who's controlling the world and why. who makes decisions to suck all the oil out of the ground and drain the blood out of your arteries? I mean, it's like, I can't get into that. That's, I shouldn't make statements like that because people get mad. They get mad at the idea.
I actually now am at a point politically where, I've never done politics on stage because
I can't
make it funny. And I imagine you can't either.
I can't.
You just get angry, right?
I get angry when someone yells, and it's a joke I did before I couldn't do jokes anymore for about a year. Some guy stood up and said, "The South will rise again."
Oh, geez.
And I said, and this is the truth. I said, "Sir, we're in Boston."
He said that in Boston?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. By the way, there's no intelligence level or logic level for most hecklers. So there you go.
No, and some people just want to connect, but that's not a connection. That's a disconnection, and that makes the audience boo. And then it's like, hey, you want your money back? Fine, I'll pay it to you back in Civil War coins. you know. Oh my! We all should rise again. Everybody should rise again.
All it takes is, sir, we're in Boston. You don't have to come up with anything else.
No.
The funniest line is always the simplest and most obvious.
And the truth.
Truth. Well, that's
blam.
Simplest, most obvious truth. Boom. Most times we'll get a laugh, and everyone would think you got to try and be clever. That's the cleverest one you can do in funny. Sometimes clever is the enemy of funny.
Well, especially now, because we come from a world when the Vietnam War was happening, they were making Catch 22, they were making The Graduate, they were making all these movies afterward as a resonance of the pain that we all went through, all these rebellious things that are going to come out of this time, for sure. And it's not the left. It's not the left. It's just going to be after McCarthyism, after people lost their lives without freedom of speech, with, you know, being taken, their careers being taken away, and all those things. That causes people to try to break out and do things that would be considered a statement, but they can't be satire. People are not enjoying satire, or they don't understand it. And I don't know if it applies now. I think what we need is truth with humor in it, or humor with truth in it, obviously.
I'm going to give you an example. For the most part, Blazing Saddles ruined straight ahead Western. And so after Blazing Saddles, the only great Westerns were Unforgiven, like a handful of great. It had to be at that level.
Well, that's a special, Unforgiven's a special thing.
Because
that's
saying,
an homage to 30 years of Westerns.
But our current government, really, what satire can you do that's crazier than what's really going on?
Right.
There is no satire. Satire's been limited. So, the answer to your question is yes, somebody can do a satirical movie, but it has to be great in order to resonate. If it's not a masterpiece, it will die.
And
it
you
has
can,
to be that great.
And you can do a series in that tone. You can do that.
Yeah.
You can do anything, but it has to be great.
It has to be great.
It can't be done by someone who's just, I don't want to say young, because a 28-year-old could get exactly the tone and be exactly the person that gets it. But if you look at a lot of the stuff that's done, it is satire. The animated shows, I think, probably cover it the most.
I mean, the best satire is South Park. I mean,
that actually,
to be honest, no offense to Fuller House, the only comedy that I actually watch is, in fact, South Park. Like, I'll watch Barry, for example, which I think is a fantastic show. That being said, it doesn't give me a lot of laughs. It's not satirical.
No, it's a serious show. You know what it makes me miss? It makes me miss. Let me just say, Barry makes me miss two things: acting classes, workshops, and murdering people. That's what I miss the most when I watch.
I don't miss either of those. But Barry, I never miss an episode. I'm glued to. I laugh. I get emotional. I get like it's so well done that I love it. But I don't look at it as, even though it competes like against Curb, I don't look at it as a comedy.
No, it's not.
And I'm not going to include my own show and say, oh, that's the best comedy. I'm saying for what I watch, what brings me entertainment is South Park. Done. Now, there's other shows I like, but none that make me laugh like South Park. I, at times on South Park, will be grabbing my stomach. I'm laughing so hard.
Yeah, because you also can't believe they did it, because they take it to truth and then the next level of it.
Well, yeah, because it's a cartoon. It's delightful.
Well, let me go back to what we were saying in the beginning, and people didn't hear it because you were trying to put headphones on. I didn't hit the record button because I was so excited to see you on Zoom. You're like, send me the link. And most people spend their time, if they're over 50, trying to figure out how to get into the Zoom. You were already going. You knew what you were doing.
My 40th Zoom call.
Yeah,
it's
been
my first Zoom.
Mine too.
It's my first Zoom podcast, but I've had lots of meetings, writing meetings and pitch meetings on Zoom, and also things that have nothing to do with show business.
Same here. Yeah. Family stuff, friend stuff.
And
pitching and directing and producing some things.
Right.
But
yep.
Which is always convenient to go. And another thing I love about this project that I'm passionate about, you know, they love that. Executives love that.
I'm just funny and answer their questions.
Yeah, and they're 15. So it's like they just have to go and call the guy.
By the way, that's what they all are, very young, but I love making them laugh.
Well, make them laugh. That also means you're relevant. It also means that, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in comedy, music, those two specifically, everything is about being relevant. And what's relevant? When you tell your truth, and it affects other people.
Regardless of their age. Because there's no age. There's no age on this. People go, you're still relevant. And go, I'm never not. You just had a conversation with my friend Norman Lear.
Yeah.
And Norman was taken by you. He already knew you, of course, and knew your work. But he hadn't really spoken with you. And after the conversation, he emailed me and said, I love talking to him. Please forward his number. Actually, his assistant said Norman loved talking to him. So it didn't come first person. I want to be honest.
By the way, though, she does a Norman impression though when she tells you.
I thought it was Norman.
Actually, what's funny is she's got like a French accent, some sort of accent.
On Zoom, she wears a Norman mask, a prosthetic. But you know what I was going to tell you? we both said by the way at the same time. We started talking about, I don't know if it's on this or not, was about the blue light on the phone that keeps you up at night, that you're not, 90 minutes later go by. Did that make it to this when I hit the record button? Did I do it properly?
You're asking the wrong guy.
Exactly. So here's
I think it did make it, by the way.
I think it did. So what I noticed on it one night was a thing that I've been walking around saying, and that is creative people must create. You have to create. And that's what we started talking about.
Well, by the way, and I'll go specific to comedian as opposed to music. And I don't like bad mouthing anyone, but there's some iconic musicians that I know from behind the scenes. I know a lot of people in music, a lot of people who produce different albums, who play in different bands that work with these people. And what I know is, and I don't want to say names, but they're always looking, what's the hot thing? What are kids doing?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, no, you're iconic. Do what you do. And it's why certain bands kind of, you know, go down, but they're big live, but their albums, people lose interest in. Now, in terms of comedy, comedians can be very grounded and real. You and I have very serious conversations sometimes. But
most of the people that I find the funniest, our conversations are very serious.
Always very. Not that we don't make each other laugh, but very serious
and intimate. And we talk about things that other people have to don't normally want to talk about.
Well, there's a comfort level that comedians have with other comedians. We're almost like carny folks. It's like, you know, but
what's going to pierce through to this person? What's going to really get through? Go ahead. Sorry. I thought you were asking me a question.
But like the one, if you're not a comedian, like a real comedian, the last place you want to be with a comedian is a funeral. Because at funerals, we say, unequivocally to each other, not loud. We don't interrupt. It's not about us. And I'm not talking about memorials. I'm talking about actual funerals.
No, the funeral.
We whisper things to each other that are so inappropriate.
It's usually, why couldn't it have been blank?
As the and by the way, that blank is always in the room. Always in the room.
Or just spoke.
I'll tell you this one. I'm at Bob Einstein's memorial.
My God. Einstein. I wanted to be there. What a huge loss.
Okay. Like Fred Willard. Same. Most magical guy ever. I'm so happy. To me, the idea that I've worked with him, like maybe even a dozen times. What a joy. I mean, every
and you
time,
always had him at your house and Bob Einstein at your house. And, yeah. And you would have the Yom Kippur. For those that don't know, that's when Jews eat.
Heroes, and if my comedy heroes open themselves up to me, I'm going.
Yeah.
And so Bob, though, at his he didn't have he had a gravesite thing, but he had a memorial. That's where everyone was at. And I would turn to Larry David and go, he hated them. He hated her. And then I started doing an impression for the people in my row of Bob. Why is he talking? I never liked him. Why? Because I got to tell you, there were people that I knew there that Bob would have been like, what the fuck are they doing here?
Yeah.
Which
I wish he would shut the fuck up.
I know. And that is Bob Einstein. And I got to tell you, it happened from beginning to end. Where people got up. And then I got to tell you, I mean, this is kind of personal, but watching Albert talk about Bob, because I think they loved each other, but they fought all the time.
And we're talking about Albert Brooks, arguably one of the funniest people also that ever lived.
They fought since they were kids, like fought hard and all sorts of different things.
But Albert was given the name Albert Einstein by his father, Parker Carcass. So that is not something you want to have. It's not a good beginning.
No, but anyhow, Albert told great, great stories. And a lot of them were about fights they had. It was awesome. But and one of the greatest scenes ever, if you're watching and you've never seen the movie Modern Romance, I cannot say enough good things about this movie. But that's the only time, television or movies, that Albert and Bob, his brother, Bob Einstein, worked together. And it's an amazing scene where Albert goes to buy running shoes to sort of build a new self. And he's dealing with the guy at the shop, and it's Bob Einstein. It's in my top five scenes of all time.
I agree. And everything that led up to it was Albert on Ludes on a speakerphone with his mother.
By the way, how about that?
And that's that's 30 minutes of film, I believe. I'm not sure.
That movie would have been a great indie even now because of the limited location and the way that it was done. I mean, Albert preparing his house for to get laid, like the way he cleaned it, and putting on that that Beethoven disco song on his turntable. It's just, but that's a movie like Broadway Danny Rose is another one. There's certain movies that comedians just glob on.
Yeah.
You know?
Stardust Memories of Woody's really spoke to me. And they say that's one of his favorite films.
I love that. We like when you made your funny movies. I mean, The Aliens.
Right.
I love that movie.
Fisheye lenses. And you know what? We're going to take a quick break because this is never going to end. And it only took me 14 minutes to get it started. So this will be quick and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is a fun part. I love this.
You know, I'm going to be doing one again.
You should. You should be.
You're going to come on. It's going to be called, I'm doing one like my old title, which is By the Way.
Right.
And then I'm also going to do one that's based on Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm going to do every Curb episode, a person from that episode, whether it's an important crew member who's been through the whole thing, whether it's another actor is in it or even Larry. I'm probably going to start it with Larry on the hour pilot, although he probably won't want to watch it. I know him. But no. He loves it. Don't get me wrong, but he doesn't like doing that. But yeah, and so that's what's going to be. I'm going to do it at Largo. I'm going to do the, by the way, I'm going to do at in a studio or at home. And then every once in a while at Largo. And then and you know what's really interesting, and I say this because it's something for us to discuss. I'll do it at Largo with people being separated, smaller. It holds, I think, 250, probably 50 people can get in there and be separated and wearing their masks. For a podcast, I don't care. Now, I will not be doing stand-up again until there's a cure or it's gone. I won't. Because I can't play a room that's split up my style. I can't. And I know for you too, you got to see people smile and laugh. You have to. Now I know.
It's a nightmare. It's like a joke. It's like a cosmic joke.
But I have to say, there's always going to be a percentage from now until the end of time of people through their own paranoia, through whatever reason, anxiety, who will have a mask on. But you're talking, like, probably, I'm guessing 2 or 3 in an audience will have their mask on.
Beginning in the fall, unless we have a big rise, as people are predicting, it would be 10% of the people that would have masks at a show.
No, I disagree.
Well, I canceled everything until September. I might have to then, because I had a new hour. I was ready to do, the special's ready to go. Did you just get a call?
Yeah, I just disconnected it.
Oh, okay. Do you have to take it? Is it important?
Everything I do is important, Bob, but nothing more important than you. You're the most important. No, my first gig, a road gig, a corporate gig, is September. But I'm guessing I won't be doing it.
Hump.
I just think that where we're at, it's not, even though people go to the beach and they don't wear their mask. And by the way,
I was there the other day and I saw it. I ain't going back. Back to a family that's sitting there. And I wanted to just take a walk with my wife and we couldn't. By the way, because you can't park. So what are you doing?
Here's the thing about the mask. And there's so many people who are going down the path of it's a free country. I don't want to take away anyone's rights. I don't think it's not a free country, but what do I do think? It's a social contract with your fellow man.
Yeah.
It's a way to say, I give a shit about you. If you don't believe it, there's something wrong with you. We've got too much going on. And a lot of people are saying stuff like that. But in general, I went into my chiropractor's office, my back, but that's what they're for. But I went in there the other day, okay? And I love him. He told me how safe it was. What he didn't tell me was that his partner, who loves Trump and watches Trump never wear a mask, which is so wrong, he wasn't wearing a mask.
Is that because of the president's guidance? Do you think that's the influence?
No, he feels that it's about his rights. It's not a social contract.
That's ridiculous.
Well, no, it's selfish. And I learn a lot. Now, I don't ever see that dude, but I'm going to write. I almost walked out, but I'm going to write my, I'm supposed to go next week, but I'm going to write my chiropractor until, especially in a medical office, until your partner has respect for patients and coworkers, I'm not coming back.
Well,
it'll upset him because he's already upset about it.
Do you know what he's got? He's got a good gravesite manner, a good gravesite manner. I'm really rusty.
By the way, I think that's funny. It just didn't quite work, but it's funny.
No, well, it didn't work because I couldn't say it. I'm having these I'm hitting speed bumps with my.
He's got a good gravesite manner, and all his beds in his business are death beds. Good night, everybody.
You know, but he's got a bed, and he's got a place to hang his hat. Nobody wears a hat.
He says to his partner, "I'll put a mask on only if my patients ask for it." It's like, what the fuck? You're walking around.
It's like I'll pull up my zipper if my patients make me do that.
No, it's worse because it would be okay. It will be like a penis out peeing And he says, I'll do it in the toilet and zip up if my patients request it. That's more of what it is.
It's even like if he's your chiropractor, odds are he's crotch level with your face, which is inside the face shield. Right. And if his penis is out and he happens to be dangling it right below your face, that's, I think that's a violation. I think you should put a mask over his penis. A tiny little one.
Let's move on.
And then the little bands go around the balls.
So but when now, you do stuff like this, it only makes me love you more. And that's completely the truth. It's completely the truth. And also, we have very private behaviors that are insane that we both embrace and love. It's so funny.
Yeah, it really is. And that's the joy. That's the joy of, and I see it in people, and I've been talking to a lot of people, and with this podcast, I've actually been calling people at home that I leave their phone numbers, and and they relish, or I've been in a couple of Zoom things where a couple of friends said, hey, it's for charity, would you jump into this room of 10 people and start talking to my friends? And I don't know them, right? Oh. You've been doing that?
Oh, no, I've not done one of those. I've been asked to do stand-up. And even offers through my agent on Zoom for very little money. And I know, but the point is, that is just so no win, except for hop on and talk to everyone. You know what I did? And I'm just saying, I found this, and anyone who's listening, if you've got this situation I'm in, a principal contacted me. She contacted me and said, my teachers are pushed past the limit. We have our big Zoom meeting on Wednesday. Would you come and say hello? And I said, absolutely.
Right.
Now, a charity that I'm involved with, they were supposed to have a benefit that I was performing at in June. And they said, would you come do stand-up for 15 minutes? I said, absolutely not. I go, I'll come say hello. I will answer questions if that's what you want. But I will not do stand-up from my kitchen.
Don't,
or my living room.
Why don't people understand that? I mean, what you have to become is a broadcaster if you're doing this. And to do that, it's a conversation.
That's what you're doing right now.
Right. This is a conversation.
And this style, by the way, of broadcasting doesn't exist except for podcasts. This is the way the Tonight Show would be. You know, you just sit and talk. Or Dick Cavett. It was raconteurs. It was interesting people. And you just talk. Now it's 4.5 minutes to promote whatever it is, and nobody gives a shit.
And we'll be right back to play a game, you know.
Right. And by the way, what's on YouTube the next day? The game. Not the interview with me.
They don't mention your gig at all.
No, so that's
let's talk about that for a second, because you have an amazing fan base. Amazing. Now, I have a cross-pollination fan base, which is much more dramatic than yours, because here I am with Family TV that single parents watch with. Wait. Goldberg's is completely Family TV. But mine was one.
I'm not even trying to compare with you. I'm just saying.
I'm saying we have something similar, even though mine's more dramatic. Mine was more sugar-coated, two-dimensional, more for 14-year-old girls, specifically Full House.
Oh, my God.
And Fuller, which is almost over.
By the way, I had Daddy Daycare. I had Pixar movies, Wall-E, and the Toy Story stuff.
You're so good. Yeah, I told you when you did Wall-E, you made me cry. I mean, you're so good in Wall-E.
Thank you. I'm more proud of that than anything I've ever done. And that movie.
Isn't that weird? Because it affected me so deeply that.
It's truly a brilliant movie. Andrew Stanton wrote and directed that movie, and I think it's one of the most beautiful movies we've ever
seen. And you acted it to perfection. And I'm not licking your butt, because we both know each other's work, you know,
the point is that I have some people, kids and stuff, that look at me fondly. Like, people write me my whole life since I was a kid, and I'm like, wow, I'm 57 and look what I started when I was 20. But I would have to say that of all, like, I would say the number one child iconic person is Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
Because Dick Van Dyke, for us, as well as all these generations, has made kids, adults, everyone. I think he's the most iconic by far.
And I would say the most super talented to a point of another level.
I would never compare.
There is no, and I don't compare anyway.
I'm saying, because there is no way he's one of those people that is so special that you go, I can't. That being said, you're one of the top people that are iconic because of Full House in terms of so many young people have a warm spot in their heart for that show and you. So it's a...
And John and Dave and the kids. I mean, every...
But to differentiate it, and I know Dave's lovely. He doesn't really do much stand-up anymore that I know of.
He still goes out and does it, but I want him to be... He's so funny and blue off stage, yeah, but he doesn't want to do it because he figures, oh, Bob's got cornered the market.
Well, by the way, but here's the thing, though.
But when he's so funny.
When you're a comedian, there's already a warm spot in people's hearts for you. Because if you make somebody laugh, that's why women, like, if you make somebody laugh, it really, there's no one that I love more in terms of show business than my comedy idols. And I love comedians, but my comedy idols, oh my God, the way that they're in my heart.
Yeah.
So deep. So you have that already when you go on stage, which is wonderful.
It takes decades to do it. It takes a lot. I mean, we were both coming up. Look at how we came up. We came up slugging and not getting parts.
And by the way, you also started like me as a kid.
Yeah. Well, we're back. You know, I feel like we're nine. We've said that to each other before, where we feel like we're little kids playing.
But the key to doing what we do is to be childlike.
Right.
But what people don't understand, what goes with that is also very much an adult, very much someone who can get to the place. They go ahead.
Yeah, because I got to take care of things. And we both have producer heads, director heads, writer heads. We have those facilities, but that we're dads. We like to take care of
number one on our list is fathers.
That's true. We never spoke of that so far. We've not discussed our love of our children, but it goes without saying, right?
Yes.
It's beyond words.
You know, a father who cares or doesn't care. It's kind of sad when they don't give a crap. I see that.
I find that really weird. I find it really weird when people, because we know so many people that have split up. And then when I got divorced 24 years ago, people would say to me, so do you ever see your kids? And I literally, it's the only time I wanted to hit people because I was like, do I ever see my kids? I hate to tell you this, but I'm a better parent than you are, because I would not ask a question that would dignify. So stupid, because we had it wasn't enough. I was blessed with two television shows at the time, and you know what that's like. It makes you distracted and it makes you work all the time. But I remember coming home after doing America's Funniest Home Videos and had done Full House that day, and I laid on the floor in the playroom at my house, and my daughters, I fell asleep on the floor in the playroom. And I had a playroom, and my daughters put curlers in my hair. They braided my hair and they put curlers in. I was asleep. I hadn't stopped.
By the way, how wonderful is that?
And they took pictures of it.
Fantastic.
And I woke up and I just started laughing. And you know, and you've met my girls. They're, you know,
great. Fantastic. Yeah.
We're lucky, lucky people. So here's a question for you. I've known Larry David since before he got Fridays. So I was at the Improv one night, and I was about to go on stage, and I think the amazing Jonathan was on doing a prop bit, and Larry was supposed to go on next, and I was standing there with a guitar to go on after Larry. And so I was a guitar act at the time. This is 1979, something like that, 1980. And Larry hadn't even gotten on to Fridays, and he was a writer. And he was trying to get a job, and then he's watching this act on stage, and he's going, this is terrible. I can't believe this. This is what they want. This is the shit they want. They just want this, the guy with props. I mean, what, they want a fucking guitar act. And then, you know, that's Larry. And then he looks at me, and here I am, cut to me holding a guitar. And I'm like, I knew him enough to know that he didn't mean any malice toward me, but it was directed at me because I had a guitar on. He got on stage, and you know, he was famous for this at the time. Did you know him back then? So you knew him. So you guys, were you guys?
I saw him in New York at Catch a Rising Star numerous times. Take a look at the audience and say, not tonight, and leave. Or do two lines and say, nah, and leave. I saw him do that.
I saw him. So right after the prop act, before the guitar act, that was me. He gets on stage and he does a couple jokes. And the second one was really funny. And I can't remember what it was, but it was illiterate. And he goes something like, you know what? You people, you don't get it. Fuck you people. And he walked off stage. He was angry. And then he walked by me and he goes, I can't. They're terrible. And I got on stage. And unfortunately, I realized that he was right, and what I needed to do was what they wanted. So I sold my soul and made them laugh for 10 minutes with parodies and music and yada, yada. And then we always had a like for each other because funny's funny. You know, it just is. But his comedy, not unlike yourself, that show in particular is historical. I mean, it is. I
certainly appreciate it. I'm honored to be on it. Honored to get to work with him. I wanted to tell you an amazing Jonathan story. He's not even involved in it. I'm playing one of the cities in Michigan. I'm getting ready to go up. The owner, Joe, Italian dude, he wanted to introduce me. And this was his intro verbatim. Oh, we got a great crowd tonight. What a great, so happy you're here. Next week, we have our best show ever. The amazing Jonathan will be here next week. Best show ever. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome from Chicago, Jeff Garland. 100% true. 100% true. And I was also at that point in my life, not great, and I hate it. I let that destroy me.
That's funny how we used to let that destroy us.
Oh, yeah. Because you're not, because then your shows are more about ego and not confidence of like, I know what I'm doing.
And you're not in the moment. You're not able to somehow be in the moment.
By the way, the minute I hit the stage, I stayed in my head in the middle of his intro.
And you're not there.
That over and over and over.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I needed to do was, and what I would do now, if someone introed me like that, I would go up and I would be hyping the amazing Jonathan show.
See, that's what you would do.
Week, I've already got a dozen tickets. Because it's the best show ever. I'm sorry, I'm going to be honest with you. Tonight, disappointment. But how can it not be? Next week is the amazing Jonathan. It's going to change your life. Tonight, if I'm lucky, you won't throw things at me. But the amazing Jonathan, I'm all, like, you just dive in. It's so...
Right, you know, right, right. And am I amazing? You know, how can you know, if you need to put the word amazing before your name.
By the way, I can even do that. I could go, and how smooth does Jonathan go with amazing, the amazing Jeff? You'd spit on the ground if it said amazing Jeff out there. No, the amazing Jonathan, the way it's supposed to be. You know, God created him.
Made by God, Jeff Garland.
Yeah, no, Jonathan,
son of God. No, I don't think you want to do that. There used to be Son of God comics, by the way. They used to put it in National Lampoon. There was a whole thing of Son of God comics. There was a magician that I used to see at the Comedy and Magic Club 35 years ago named the Great Scott. Do you remember him?
No, but I remember the name.
And now the name is like the amazing Jonathan. It's right. The Great Scott. So, and it's Great Scott, you know, so it's a play on words. And he was pulling doves out of his sleeves and one was dead. So I would say that's time for a name change. That's, you know, the mediocre Scott.
But by the way,
the take no prisoners Scott.
How much would you have paid for that to happen? One of them is dead. Are you kidding me?
That's why are you doing that for a living? Why are you pulling?
By the way,
it's almost Tiger King.
And he pulls out a dead one. And to me, again, yeah, I put myself in that situation. I pull out a dead one. I make it seem like it's part of the bit. I go, screw that. And I throw it dead on the ground. But
that's a rubber one. That's a rubber one, ladies and gentlemen. You throw it on the ground and there's like blood pouring out of its head. Let me ask you a question unrelated to that, because you brought up something that I didn't know you were doing, which was two podcasts. And
well, I haven't done them yet. I mean, I right. used to do, by the way.
When do they come? When are they? When can we look forward to them?
No idea. I've got a bunch of shows in development. I know Goldberg is coming back. Curb's probably coming back. I don't have any idea for any of it. So, but I
is Larry going to do a spite season?
Yeah, yeah, spite another show that he doesn't like that he wasn't treated nice on. No.
Do you think he's happier with? I hate asking about Larry, but he's such a fascinating
by
human.
The way, it's not. By the way, when people want to talk about him, I want to talk about him.
Yeah.
I'm enamored. He's one of my best friends. I'm completely enamored by him. I can't get enough of what.
Am I like 12th on the list? I mean, it's J.J. Abrams. It's Larry. Does it go by? Right. What does it go by?
You're 8.
I'm number 8.
Larry, J.J. Abrams, the Olsen twins account together as 3. Ben Vereen.
Lola Falana?
No.
Angie Dickinson?
No.
Frank? George Kirby?
George Kirby's ghost.
Okay.
Buddy Epson's ghost. Miss Sheena Easton. Then you.
All right. Is Lionel Richie in there?
No.
So all
you're right. Way above him. Stop it.
Okay.
It's so like you, though. My, you know, as much as people watching are like going, oh, Bob with the thing, he's playing this insecure thing. No, it's real. No, he wants to know that he's one of the most important people, which he is, and I love him. But you think he doesn't need that? Don't. Yes, he does.
No, there's a certain
friend. If you're his friend, you will give him that, but also fuck with him. That's the combo, because he does laugh at himself.
People do fuck with me.
He does want to know. I say these people. By the way, I don't throw around close friends like off. That's not a thing I like doing. You know, I have my close friends, and then other people I know who I like, and there you go. So,
well, your kids are number one, right?
Well, they're not on my friend list, but I call them my best friends. I love them. There's
so you're lying. You're lying to them.
I am lying to them. But there's nothing, there's truly nothing on earth that matters to me as much as my boys. I love them so much.
More than me?
Yes.
Jesus, this is hard for me to go through.
Bob, if they told me, and you know both my boys really dig you.
I love
them. If my boys told me we'd prefer you not hang out with Bob, I wouldn't be seeing you anymore. I won't let a woman do that, but I would let my children tell me, we don't think it's good for you. All this Bob Saget time. You need to, or at least just take it once a month and acknowledge him.
That's almost sci-fi.
It is. That's not even,
back to the Larry thing. Do you think he loves Curb more than Seinfeld?
I know he does. I know he does. And it took me by surprise. Season 2 maybe of Curb, maybe 3, I told him that Seinfeld was my one of my 2 or 3 favorite sitcoms. And
right.
He was insulted because I didn't say how great Curb was. It wasn't like in a strange ego way. It was just, I didn't know that you felt so strongly about Curb type of way. Like, he wasn't mad at me, you know?
Right.
But he's like, what about Curb? And I go, how can I include something that I'm on? That I'm a producer.
Is it
on?
Because there's as much collaboration as he has on Curb? I mean, obviously there was more for sure on Seinfeld because of Jerry and that whole machine.
Yeah, it's scripted, and it's Larry's the final word on Curb too. Curb is definitely a lot of collaboration, a lot, every take. But it's always Larry's thing, but also Larry starring in it. Like, it's more Larry. It's like, really, it's like if you like Curb, you like Larry David. There's no, would be shocked to find somebody who loves Curb but can't stand Larry David. And you didn't need that for Seinfeld. He was the guy with the cape. He was the voice. Remember the guy with the cape? Why is the guy wearing a cape? Which was great. And
right.
Then there was he was the voice of what's his name? George you know, the Yankee owner, Steinbrenner.
Right.
Curb is so much more personal for him. He also shared a lot with Jerry. Jerry would have his things and script it. And, you know, it's a different experience. And by the way, Curb, I always tell people, you love it, it's because of Larry David. You hate it, Larry David.
It's such a wonderful character. It's not, and that's why a 20-year-old, a 14-year-old, like you're saying, could love the show so much, because they're so fed up with people. Everybody's fed up with people and doesn't want to be around people.
When I was in high school, I loved Monty Python, and what also had come out at that point was Fawlty Towers. So I'm a high school student loving Fawlty Towers, with the most curmudgeon, maybe even more than Larry,
right,
star, John Cleese. So I know.
Who has softened, by the way. He has become a sweetheart.
But I know that any kid that watches Curb is me, because they love that other thing, that Monty Python, that SCTV, which is for comedy fans. So when a teenager digs Curb, it's because they love comedy.
Well, I'm sitting in a room that's a study of mine, and I've got three photos of Chaplin here. I've got pictures of Chaplin. So I started, who's your favorite comedian? And I would say Chaplin. Now, the guy didn't talk. And did, it was in The Great Dictator, and we didn't want to hear him doing Hitler.
Comedy Store La Jolla has all the silent comics on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, Laurel and Hardy, Chaplin, and I always would take time out to explain who they were and say that they're my favorites, and then explain that they didn't talk, although Chaplin talked towards the end.
Yeah, but
Limelight. Oh, I love Limelight.
I loved every one of them. I have his 8mm versions of The Immigrant and The Tramp. And
did you buy them later on, like on eBay?
I bought them as a kid. I bought them from Black Hawk Films.
From your childhood,
yeah. Davenport, Iowa sold them in Black Hawk Films, it was called. But then I loved the Marx Brothers, and I knew Larry from the Three Stooges. I met Larry because I was a Three Stooges fan. So I went all around from stupid to intelligent comedy. I loved all of it.
So funny. And the only, but here's another thing. All the way through Rodney, through Robin.
Oh, by the way, you just mentioned the two people that I spent a weekend with, Bruce Baum and Rodney and Robin, in La Jolla at the Comedy Store for the whole weekend. For a Friday and a Saturday.
Rodney
came in. He was trying to go to La Costa to get cleaned out. And I've talked about it before. He came in with two women. And he went, I guess they were escorts of some kind. And he said, I can't clean out, man. No booze, no coke, no pot, no pills. And then he recognized me from the Merv Griffin show. And he said, you're funny. You got a Jew head. You're never going to be happy. But you're funny, man. And then he would give me advice. And then with Robin.
I have to use the word jealous. You were very close with Rodney. And Rodney, I follow him on Instagram. Rodney,
I'm going to show you something. I know you got to leave, but I'm going to show you something.
I paid and saw him in concert back then. And I had
look at this. Are you ready?
Yeah.
This is Rodney's box.
Oh, wow.
And his widow, Joan, gave it to me. And inside of it, this is the price of admission right here. Inside of it is his pot pipe. And I also have a letter from Rickles in here. Here's a picture.
Wow.
And that's Robin and Tim Allen and Lovitz and Rodney. Yeah. And it was at one of my scleroderma benefits. Because Robin, like you've done it, he did it 7 times. Robin would say...
I think I've done it 3 or 4. I'm not sure.
Definitely 4. Definitely 4.
Okay. But here's the thing.
We're going to do a virtual one if you want to do one of those. We're going to do one this year.
I won't do it.
It's not stand-up. I'm telling everybody. You just talk to the camera. You just talk to the people watching.
I would love to say hello and do it. I'm in.
Yeah, that's all. It's like 4 minutes of how's your COVID going, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm in. I like that. They're here.
Okay. Jeff Garlin.
But by the way, we didn't even touch the surface and all the things we could talk about.
Now let's do this again.
Oh, what I wanted to say about...
I only have 10,000 episodes to make, so it's not a problem.
But I wanted to say, though, for me, when I first started and going into the 90s is when it kind of changed. It was all about who was funny, what was funny, not who was famous. And so
yeah,
if you're successful, you walk into the store and they treat you like a king or a queen. It has nothing to do with how funny you are. A lot of this.
Back but then like, it did. Mitzi had a good call. Mitzi did know. She started me. She said, "You're funny. You shouldn't go to grad school at USC. Right. How's Robin? Bob, talk to Robin. He's choosing the wrong movies." I said, "He's got Rollins and Joffe. It's okay."
Yeah.
I introduced him to Kennison. And she said, "Sam, I love
what's
Sam."
What's delightful is when you see people like who were just talking about, the Italian dude.
Sebastian.
It's lovely when you see people who are funny with joy, who go on to great success.
Takes a while.
He was around for years.
I watched Mark Maron at the store for 20 years. And when I say his name, my heart bleeds right now because he's going through such a hard time.
Yeah.
And he's such an amazing guy and so brilliant. And when I would see him, he would go, "I don't know why it's not happening for me." And I go, "You're so great. Just hold on." I have. And I still didn't do what I wanted to do. I haven't come here to do what I have to do yet. So I'm still, and you're the same way. We're on a path to, then we talk to Norman Lear and he slaps me on the face at 97 and tells me I'm a kid. So that's how I think of you.
By the way, he said to me, I want to go 57. You're a boy. But by the way, fuck yes.
That's exactly right.
He's 40 years old.
That's,
he can call me a boy.
And he's a fucking genius and one of the most honest, beautiful people on this earth.
He's a motivator for me. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
On a short list. Yeah. All right, I love you. Thank you.
I love you. You're my best friend.
You're not mine, but you're up there.
I'm number eight. I'm fine.
By the way, Bob Einstein came up with that. Larry David did not. The "you're my best friend," where Marty Funkhauser would always say to Larry, "We're best friends." And there we go. No, we're not. Yes, we are. We are best friends. It was, and you never knew when he was going to do it, but that was never in the outline. That was always.
I'm just going to tell you that two very famous people that I was in presence of, two well-known people, one of them said to the other, "You know, you're my best friend." And the other person went, "I am?" Had no clue that the other person, who was less social, regarded him as one of his best friends in his life. And that just goes to show it's best not to call it out. But I'm very happy with number eight. I'll take it. If we lose more people, maybe I'll slide down to seven. If you make some better friends.
By the way, Bob, no matter how it clears out, I'm just keeping you at eight.
Okay. It's a lucky number.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
I love you. Jeff Garland. I love him. He's my number seven best friend. He put me at number eight. I'm okay. You know, it's like anything else. You move up and down the charts. As you know, when you look at podcasts, what's number one one day is gone the next day because they moved to somewhere. It's showbiz and algorithms. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to this conversation. Jeff, we'll be back because we never stop talking. And I love him so much. He's a really good person, by the way, and a great dad. And he's a very gentle kisser. So do what you're supposed to do. You know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to subscribe and rate and review. And that's only a positive. You just go positive. You just go, you know, five stars. Why go negative? I like the moment. I don't know if anybody's watching. If you happen to see this on the YouTube page, which is, what is it? It's youtube.com/Bob Saget. I don't like /Bob Saget. It sounds like I'm getting cut. But I was downing the soda, and to empty it out, I just was on frame with the can upside down in my mouth. It must have been 12 minutes. I was that cheap. It wasn't cheap. I was that thirsty. It wasn't like I needed to have the last drop of liquid. I hope you're all safe and doing better. And everybody always says we're all in this together. I just don't want to hear it if we're all in quicksand. That would be it, right? I said that to someone on the podcast the other day. I love repeating myself. That's what's great about a podcast. You end up repeating yourself. So you guys take it easy. And I'll be seeing you next time on, Bob Saget's here for you.